Rare and appropriate, my trick for dieting without tricks. I very much enjoy stating that I've never had a drink of alcohol or a toke of any recreational drug in my life. What I don't state is that I will never have a drink of alcohol or toke of any recreational drug in my life. I can report in the past, but I'm reluctant to predict the future. The hippies were right about fresh vegetables and staying away from fast food, so maybe they're right about LSD. What the fuck do I know? I don't even trust myself completely on the past. I remember things wrong all the time. I'm not willing to say I'm never going to do recreational heroin, so I'm sure as shooting not going to close the Big Mac door forever. I'd like to say that I'll never be a fat fuck again, but I'm not sure of that. I try to take promises, even to myself, seriously. I've got the Furman diet under control. Easy cooks me great food. I don't even have many cravings for shitty food anymore. But I'm not going to say that any food is off my table for good. Cray-Ray conducts experiments himself and keeps up with all the other scientists. But none of the stuff I'm about to write about has really been proven yet. Diet is complicated. It'll be a long time before we know enough for certain. Ray ran an experiment on himself, which he ate all he could once a week during supper time, say from 8 p.m. to midnight every Friday, something like that. He sometimes hit 6,000 calories in 1 4-hour window. A couple of times he ate until he puked and then ate some more. He did stupid gluttony every Friday evening until midnight, and then went right back on hardcore Furburger for the rest of the week. He did this for a good long time and didn't gain any weight. He didn't experience any other ill health effects either. But this is Cray-Ray just monkeying around. This wasn't in the lab, so we don't know what he was fucking up that he couldn't or didn't measure. Ray would never report this publicly until he has real, replicable experiments. He's a scientist. He wants real data and real information. But he talks to his buddy Penn, who is not a scientist. Vegas dipshit Penn will report anything to anyone, no matter how half-assed. Ray isn't saying anything on the subject of binging yet. This is all Penn. You are getting this health information from a juggler. When Cray-Ray did this to himself, he ate wholesome foods on these fatty Fridays. He wasn't slamming Big Macs and donuts. He was doing high calorie but not sad. So an unreliable juggler is reporting to you that one guy, a really smart guy, but still just one guy, ate a wicked lot once a week and didn't get fatter. Then Cray-Ray did another non-replicable experiment that he himself would never report, but I don't give a fuck, so I will. He added a treat every day. He ate perfectly all day, all week, except for a few hundred calories worth of treat once a day. He'd have a couple of Oreos or something like that. Now, when Cray-Ray had this small treat every day, his weight started sneaking up. He was gaining weight. Soon, Cray-Ray will do these experiments properly. He'll report his findings in peer-reviewed journals, and people will really know this stuff. But as of this writing, it's just me speculating. It's not a scientist speculation, but a Las Vegas magician speculation on science he knows nothing about. Based on this information, I am sure I can have a shit ton of bacon and donuts every 2 weeks. I've taken Cray-Ray's little experiment and extrapolated it to nonsense. Ray came up with the phrase, rare and appropriate for this idea, and I love it. My thinking, and I repeat, this is based on nothing that's really scientific, is that the body is really good at handling binging and not good at handling things that are chronic. And what follows is my personal take on rare and appropriate. In his experiment, Cray-Ray was eating like a pig once a week. Furburger, in an early book, writes, please remember, I'm paraphrasing, distorting, and misremembering, that your health will stay fine if you get 10% of your calories from shit. I decided for myself that I could have rare and appropriate no more than once every 2 weeks. 2 weeks is double the interval Cray-Ray tried, and I'd be eating less shit than Furburger's allowable 10%. I could wait a minimum of 2 weeks, and then I would eat whatever I wanted. I'm writing all around the barn here to avoid saying that every 2 weeks I'm going to have a cheat day. Motherfucker, I hate that phrase, cheat day. I really hate it. Cray-Ray really hates it. It's not cheating. My rules include eating like a sick pig every couple of weeks. So I'm not cheating. I'm playing by my rule. I have an open marriage with my diet. We have an understanding. We have an arrangement. My diet is fine with me banging the shit out of pulled pork tacos now and again. My diet knows it doesn't mean anything. Every 2 weeks, I'm a culinary Russell Brand, and then I go back to being someone who's known for not fucking, which is No one, but I'm him or her, whoever that is. I have a note file on my computer called RNA. And in there, I write down when I last ate like a sick pig, so I always know when I'm past my 2 weeks and have a RNA available. I came up with this plan while I was still in my loss phase. The plan was really important to me. I'd see all my brothers and sisters on movie night eating bacon and brownies, and I think to myself, once I hit my target weight, every 2 weeks, I'll eat all of this and more. It made things easier, thinking, not never, just not now. And when I finally reached my target weight, I thought about what my RNA would be. When Penn and Teller were booked on Broadway, I knew I'd have corned beef, pastrami, cheesecake, egg creams, celery, Ray's pizza. Man, there's a lot of Ray's in food, huh? Bagels, cream cheese, lox, and soft serve. I'd be able to have all of that during a 6-week run, but I wouldn't have it every day or even every week. I could easily go to NYC and not eat any of that, but it would be hard to know I was going to NYC and not eat any of that at all. It's pretty easy to not eat something right now when I know I'll be eating it in the future. I hit my target weight on my 60th birthday, March 5th, 2015. That was the day I went from losing to maintenance, but it was also my birthday. So not only did I have the stuff I would soon be eating every day for the first time in months, like fruit and nuts, but also, as Ray said, it's your birthday. Have some cake. Let's talk about chocolate cake. When I was a child, chocolate cake was a treat. My mom would make me a chocolate cake on my birthday, and we'd all feast. But I didn't have chocolate cake every week or even every month. I had it on my birthday, and maybe a couple other times a year at other birthday celebrations, and maybe once at a restaurant. Mom baked a few chocolate cakes a year. But that's not the way it was my fat adult life. Chocolate cake was there whenever I wanted it, and it was there to make me want it. When I would go to an airport, which is almost every week, I'd get a cup of coffee at Starbucks and maybe a muffin for breakfast. A triple chocolate muffin with chocolate chips in it. What the fucking fuck? That's a muffin like Bin Laden was a protester. Starbucks sells chocolate cake with more calories than my mom's birthday chocolate cake, and they sell it for breakfast. When I ate my mom's chocolate cake, it was at a little party. We'd all be wearing little hats, and we'd take a bite and praise my mom for her baking and think about the cake and enjoy it, and then have another piece, or maybe two, and say, oh, I ate too much. The Starbucks chocolate cake, I'd eat that while talking on the phone at the airport. It was nothing. It wasn't an event. It was just breakfast. Get something in my stomach to get me through the flight to L.A., where I would walk into a meeting and find more muffins and bagels and cream cheese and Yoplait, which is yogurt like a Snickers bar is a peanut, and yogurt isn't good for you to begin with. So I'd come home. I ate my birthday chocolate cake with Cray Ray in celebration, just like I'd eaten my mom's chocolate cake, except this time it wasn't as good. Fucking vegans. One of the many non-intuitive, well, just bug-nutty crazy things about my new way of eating is getting me excited about food that I've been eating and not caring about. I hadn't been excited about chocolate cake for decades. Why would I be? I was having it while walking around in airports. It wasn't an event. When I was a child, our family went out to eat regularly, but not often. This was when Roquefort dressing was 50 cents extra, and my mom got it because it was a big treat and she liked exotic foods. Maybe once every month or so, we'd go out for a steak. That was a big deal. The food we ate at home at this time would make Cray Ray crazier, but the restaurant food, although not quite rare and appropriate, at least wasn't constant. As I grew up and got more successful, I could afford to eat out at really nice places. Business meetings in cities where I was working would be held at steakhouses, where the blue cheese dressing didn't cost a penny extra and you could put it on your steak. With the exception of Skyline Chili in Cincinnati and Durgan Park in Boston, there was no restaurant that was a rare treat for me. They even had Krispy Kreme donuts in Vegas, and the owner of the shop would bring them backstage for us. I had plenty of money to eat at any restaurant, and I usually didn't need to pay. Andy Warhol had his NYC artist diet, where someone took you out to supper, you would order the most expensive thing on the menu that you didn't like, push it around on the plate, and ask to have it boxed up and give it to a homeless person. I never did that. I ate everything on the table. The celebration was constant. But as the fat and the sickness built up, there was no real joy. It's like having someone lick your genitals 24 hours a day, every day. Okay, bad example. Now, on the Penn's RNA program, I'd be able to look forward to food again. And every 2 weeks is really often. If I had a birthday party every 2 weeks, I'd be 1,580 years old. And when eating muffins at Starbucks every day, I felt that old. I know, back off. I've gotten lost here, haven't I? I've conflated the RNA every 2 weeks with a muffin chocolate cake at Bucky's every day. The two-week time frame is from the new eating, the muffin, and the feeling sick, or from the old eating. I've ended up kind of making the opposite point I was trying to make, but as fucked up as it is, it's not nearly as fucked up as comparing Bin Laden to a muffin, and we got by that, didn't we? I had chocolate cake on my birthday, and I could stop losing weight. I just had to maintain my weight, which is way harder. It seems that most anyone can lose weight, but keeping the weight off for a couple of years is something only about 1% of dieters do. 1% is a term some bikers use. I had a buddy who used to be a really bad guy who got a tattoo in prison, strictly jailhouse, that read 1%. It supposedly comes from a statement made a long while ago by the American Motorcycle Association that 99% of motorcyclists were law-abiding citizens. So those who prided themselves on being outlaws started calling themselves 1%ers. I was just about to suggest that we co-opt that term for people who live outside the law of SAD and keep the weight off and stay healthy for years after losing it. As I began to type that, I realized I was suggesting taking something away from people who pride themselves in being outlaw bikers and going to prison. I have no problem pissing off magicians and ventriloquists, but outlaw bikers, I think we should respectfully let them have that term. So I'll say that I hoped my Furburger with the added two-week rule would put me in the vast minority. How's that? I'll write about my daily eating elsewhere. I'm writing about RNA here. So the rule I set up for myself was that I'd go at least 14 days between breaks in the Furman diet, and I would try to keep that to one meal, which I loosely defined as 4 hours. I also added to that, half-jokingly, that I'd only do my RNA at really expensive restaurants and when someone else was paying. March 20 was 2 weeks out from my chocolate cake and the first day the Penn rule would allow rare and appropriate, but I waited 3 weeks more. I didn't do my next RNA until April 10th. I hope this means I've learned a little bit about how to control myself. Knowing that I could have anything I wanted made it easier to eat the way I really wanted to. 5 weeks was easy because those were 5 weeks of maintenance eating, not eating to lose weight. Finally, the day came that seemed right. A couple of friends were going with Easy and me to see Diana Ross, and they invited us out to dinner. It was a nice, expensive place, and I knew they were paying. Oh boy, time to rare and appropriate all over their asses. I had no idea what to expect. I heard stories from my hippie friends about not eating meat for a while and then having a taste of hamburger, which made their guts go nutty, just disgusting. You could fit everything I know about the microbiome into a bacterium, but I was afraid that all the cooties that digested animal products for me were dead and gone. I'd wind up clutching my guts and running to the restroom. Cray-Ray told me to be careful on this first RNA and not go too crazy. I told Cray-Ray to go fuck himself. I was afraid of getting sick, but that didn't stop me. I was even more afraid of not getting sick and loving the food. I was more afraid that I'd like it, feel great, and realize what I'd been missing, and that I'd never be able to go back to the diet. If I got sick, the night would suck, and if I loved it, the night would suck. I was celebrating eating well by eating badly, but it had been 5 weeks, and someone else was paying. When I said Cray-Ray could fuck himself, I meant it. I ate everything that night, everything. I ate fried calamari. I'd had nothing fried for 5 months, not even one taste of a Freedom Fry. But I started pounding down the breaded, greasy, rubber band Star Trek the appetizer wonder that is squid. It was good. I couldn't wait to get my mouth around bread and butter. I had no bread or anything like bread and no butter or anything like butter for 5 months. And it was good. Fresh, hot bread with creamy butter at the right temperature is the best. Put the butter on thick and yellow without guilt. There was a basket of assorted breads, and I had to try them all. Well, try didn't enter into it. I ate them all. My friends kept asking me what it was like, and I kept saying, good. I was pounding in the food, eating like a freak, but I was distracted by what I was feeling. I wasn't feeling that I had to rush to the restroom, but I also wasn't feeling feasting heaven. I was feeling okay. and nothing could have shocked me more. "Hey there, cheese, let's eat all of you. Yum!" There were mussels in garlic butter sauce with that nice bread to dip into the butter. But I buttered the bread before sticking into the butter because that's the kind of guy I am. I had a super fancy restaurant bacon cheeseburger because that was the last thing I'd craved when I still had cravings. I put mayo and ketchup on that bad boy and had really salty French fries swimming in sugary ketchup. The closest thing I had to health food was a chickpea side dish, but even those were deep fried. Worried that I might be skimping on the animal fat, salt, and more fat and salt, I had pate and salty pickles. It was all good. Then it was time for dessert. I had a big gooey chocolate dish with caramel and a molten center. I ate a lot of food. It was amazing how much I ate. What was more amazing was that this was about what I would have eaten before I started this diet, or if I wasn't being careful on any other diet. 2014 Penn would not have been appalled. This is what I would have eaten. And it didn't taste any better than it had tasted when I was fat. It didn't taste any worse. I wasn't disgusted by all the fat and sugar. The animal products didn't seem dirty and awful. It just seemed the same. It shocked me how normal it felt. And I was only slightly haunted by how sick I was going to be. How I would be regretting eating like a pig. Cray Ray had told me to be careful. He had said my guts might not be able to handle this, and I was ignoring Cray Ray and eating another taste of someone else's dessert. I kept being shocked that nothing was shocking. It was neither good nor bad. I was just eating. The check came, and I didn't pay a cent. I didn't even offer to pay the tip. My costs would all come later as this hit my guts. We headed over to Diana Ross's show, and I kept worrying about getting sick and having to leave. My mouth had written a check that my intestines were about to default on. I had starved all my fat fuck allies in my microbiome, and all that were left were the wimpy veg eaters. I knew there would be hell to pay, I just hoped it wouldn't be too embarrassing. I enjoyed the show. Diana Ross didn't embarrass herself either. My first RNA turned out to be better in a way I couldn't have imagined. The food didn't taste better than it would have tasted when consuming that shit was chronic. It was just about the same. I didn't get sick, and it wasn't sickening to me. It was just food. Food that I don't usually eat. What I couldn't have predicted was nothing. No big deal. This was the best news possible. I was dancing. Bob Dylan once said he wanted to play guitar without tricks. I've thought about that a lot. If a musician is really good, you have no idea how good he or she is. They play what is right for the music, no more and no less. If what is right is a Johnny Cash open chord strum, he or she plays that. If the song requires a moment of Van Halen, he or she plays that. The skill is in service to the art. Taylor and I try to do magic without tricks. If you take that at the surface level, I hope we failed. But at a deeper level, it's what we're going for. There should be an ease and clarity to anything that's real and from the heart. Things that are true shouldn't have tricks. Can we do magic tricks without showbiz tricks? That's what we're trying for. Diana Ross was great. She can sing. She was never working too hard to hit the notes and sell the song. She had bona fide hits and sang them perfectly. She wasn't desperate. She wasn't cloying. She was a pro. She sang her Motown without tricks, except for maybe when she told us to follow our dreams as an afterthought. As supreme as she was, I was more blown away by Cray Ray. As I stood in the audience dancing, I was thinking about how follow your dreams seems like irresponsible advice. Should I really have a sex orgy with all the MILFs at my daughter's school in the middle of Disney's Main Street Electrical Parade while the original Iron Butterfly plays Inagata David alive while Lord Buckley dances naked in a derby? Maybe that is a good idea. But the important thing is that I was thinking about that and not about food in either a positive or negative way. It's possible that Cray Ray had gotten me to diet without tricks. I wasn't dieting at all. I was simply eating. I ate good food to be healthy most of the time, and then once in a while, when it was rare and appropriate, meaning someone else was paying, I'd eat food that was more decadent. When the song required it, I could bang out some three-chord rock and roll, but that wasn't all that I was able to play. Cray Ray was wrong about one thing. My gut handled the food fine. A huge influx of salt, fat, and sugar might have been microbiome Woodstock, but it sure wasn't Katrina. I felt better after eating that expensive, sad meal, post-Cray Ray, than I would have when I was eating like that chronically. When I ate like that all the time, far from being used to it, I felt awful after every big meal, and that meant every meal. I felt sluggish and shitty. How surprising that eating this meal when I was out of practice would feel better than when I was a professional fat fuck. I felt a little overfull and a little yuck, but not that bad. The salt fucked up my mouth a bit. My mouth didn't seem fresh and wholesome. I could feel the salt on the membranes flowing inside of me. I was really thirsty, but not in a panicked way. That was the downside of the meal. But I was more worried about the upside, and as it turned out, that was fine too. There was no temptation to eat like that the rest of the night or the next day. One drink was not too many. I didn't fall off the wagon. It was beyond perfect. It was just kind of nothing. I got home and chatted with Cray Ray about it a lot. I was over the moon happy. He had predicted all sorts of digestion problems, but it was all fine. And the next day, there was no real weight change, just the usual pound or so fluctuation. Even my blood pressure didn't spike. I had some trouble falling asleep because my guts were rumbling a bit, but they weren't going crazy. I felt fine. Wow. Bob Dylan and Cray Ray working together. Afterward, the every 2-week plan remained in effect, but 2 weeks after Diana, nothing came up. A whole month went by before my buddy Mac King called and said he wanted to take me out to supper. Maybe this was becoming a thing. Since people knew that my going out for rare and appropriate was going to be rare, they wanted to be part of it. Mac asked if he'd take me to supper when I wanted to be off Furman and he would pay. Good thinking. Mac is the best act in Vegas. He does an afternoon show at Harrah's that is the best comedy magic show I've ever seen. Most comedy magic shows aren't really funny and don't really have good magic. His comedy magic show would hold up without tricks as a comedy show and without jokes as a magic show. Mac is good. Mac is also a good friend. Mac was the first of us to slide into crazy diet world. Mac was never a fat fuck, but Mac had high cholesterol. He read The China Study by T. Colin Campbell and Thomas M. Campbell II and stopped all animal products. We made fun of him. And I thought he wasn't getting enough protein. I worried about his weight loss and his health while I was a fat fuck. I think Mac coined the phrase unethical vegan for how he just picked bacon off the salad and then ate it. Animal products weren't magic. He just didn't eat them. Mac was the first of us to get healthy with diet, but we kind of didn't notice it until Cray Ray came into our lives. Now Mac wanted us to go out together and eat a lot of the kind of food we now ate only rarely. I considered changing my rule to once a month RNA, but it seemed like having the rule be at least 2 weeks and then often a month was fine. Mac and I made a date. Our family just bought a new house in the fancy section of Vegas over by Mac's place, and there was a really nice steakhouse where he knew the owners and stuff. He would pay, and we would eat like pigs. I have sent a lot of customers to Mac's show. If you're in Vegas and you want to see a great show in the afternoon, go see him. And please tell him I sent you. I need to send a lot of businesses away just to make up for what I ate on Mac's dime that rare and appropriate night in May. I had foie gras, steak tartare, bread and butter, a shellfish platter, tomahawk steak, mac and cheese waffles, and a twice-baked potato. Of course, I left room for dessert, which was an apple tart, ice cream, fancy-ass rich-person donuts with dipping sauce, and cheesecake. I couldn't make up my mind. I believe there was a one mouthful I ate that would have been part of my usual diet. Animal products, salt, fat, oil, refined grains, all of it. My mouth dried out and tasted awful from the salt. I was a little sluggish, but it was fine. It wasn't a thing in either direction. Two professional magicians dieting without tricks. Cray Ray said months before that it was fine to have Thanksgiving dinner, and when you say, oh, I'm not going to eat for days after this, just don't. So the day after the Mac feast, I didn't eat until supper time, and then very lightly. It wasn't a big deal to me, but I wasn't around when his Amex bill came in. When I instated my RNA plan, I also told our manager, the long-suffering Glenn, that my change in diet would not affect me professionally in any way. In order to sell our live Vegas show, we have to go on TV. This means I do crazy shit like The Celebrity Apprentice and Celebrity Wife Swap. My buddy Rob Pike observed that any time a field of science has the word science in it, it wasn't science. Computer science, social science, you get the idea. That idea is also absolutely true for the word celebrity. If the TV show has celebrity in the title, there won't be a real celebrity to be found. Remember, it wasn't the celebrity Beatles at Shea Stadium. It's not the celebrity Jay-Z show or all celebrity Avengers. Because I'm not much of a celebrity, I go on celebrity shows all the time. I used to think that to sell tickets to our little magic show, I had to go on TV and do magic. That's just not true. It doesn't seem to matter what I do on TV. Donald Trump likes to claim that without his having had me on his TV show, Penn and Teller would be nothing. He is, of course, wrong. First of all, it wasn't his fucking show. We were both actors on an NBC show. It wasn't his show. I wasn't on the show to get a job from him. He had no job to offer me. I wasn't looking for a job, and he didn't fire me because I wasn't working for him. None of that really happened, and everyone in America, except Trump, that deluded motherfucker with hair that looks like cotton candy made of piss, knows that. I really like Trump a lot, I do. But I like him as a co-worker, not as a boss or a president. I guess I kind of sort of worked for him when he maybe kind of sort of owned an Atlantic City casino that PNT worked at. But then that joint went bankrupt on his watch. All that being said, and said over and over, I kind of say that shit every chance I get, Trump was right about the big picture. The Celebrity Apprentice sold more tickets to Penn & Teller than anything else we've done. It's true we're already in the Penn & Teller Theater and been running successfully before Trump and I did that show together, but those celebrity shows sure helped a lot. There are a lot of celebrity cooking shows, so I have to go on those too. And when I was asked to be a judge or contestant on a cooking show, I didn't want to do that as a nutritarian. If a TV show was serving SAD, or I was asked to cook SAD, that is what I would eat. Anything that came through the P&T office would be automatically off the diet, an automatic RNA without a two-week timer running. I've used that automatic RNA without a two-week timer running only once, and it was 7 weeks after my last RNA, so I didn't really need the celebrity dispensation. We were getting our big return to Broadway together. I had to fly to London for a day to do a TV show over there, and then back to New York to do Bobby Flay and Jimmy Fallon, and then back to Vegas the next day. Jimmy Fallon tore his finger off, so I just did Bobby Flay. I was excited. Even though the time frame put me in RNA territory, I liked that it was a special celebrity feast. I was going to judge, which is the best way to be on these cooking shows. If you're ever given a choice, be a judge and not a contestant. These shows are not real, but by the time you get to being judged, it's very hard to remember that. The flop sweat and anxiety are very real. I got to the Bobby Flay set and decided it wasn't just when I was on camera, but also all the time backstage that I was off the healthy clock. And my trailer was muffin cake, but it didn't seem great, so I didn't have any. In the green room, there was chocolate, lots of chocolate. There were M&Ms, which I love, and also really fancy chocolate, which I also love. I grabbed a handful of M&Ms, my first in over 6 months, and they were waxy and cloying with a really bad aftertaste. What the fucking fuck? Cray Ray had fucked me so deep and hard, he'd ruined me for M&Ms. I tried the fancy, expensive chocolate. It was okay, but it was too sweet. And this was the dark shit. I liked my plain cocoa on fruit better. There was a cheese platter, and that just tasted greasy and spoiled. I'm exaggerating here. It wasn't disgusting. It just wasn't great. I was tasting forbidden fruit, and it wasn't that big a deal. It just wasn't good. It was vaguely disappointing, like when I found out that gay sex was all the stuff I'd done with women, just done with a guy. There was nothing special. This food was all good. It's nice to eat, but I enjoyed my straight diet better. I went out to judge the food and found it was pasta, which I've missed, and soup, which I love. The pasta tasted like oil and salt to me. That's nice, but it didn't blow me away. I then found out that I wasn't going to get to judge the round where Bobby Flay made steak. What the fucking fuck? I begged. So they slipped me a perfect steak with a nice cheese sauce along with some potato thing. Just great. And I ate that, and I liked it. I liked it fine, but it wasn't magic. I sure didn't want any more of it. Just to show I was still me, I went to Kraft Services and grabbed some good old plain Lay's potato chips and ate them the way they should be eaten, shoving as many as possible in my mouth at once, and they just tasted salty and slightly spoiled. It was so easy to go back to my Furburger diet, so easy. Cray Ray had given me all the skills, and they were embedded so deep in me that I could just live my life. No obsessing over food, no deals with myself, no cheating. I was just healthy. When the P&T Broadway run first started, I had one accidental RNA. It's the only one I've had that I didn't plan in advance. Our family went out to a restaurant that EZ loves, one with an antipasto bar and lots of vegetables. The menu was filled with vegan soups, and it seemed like maybe I could just order. I ordered vegan soup and beets. And what came was full of salt and oil. It was clearly not the Furburger way. I didn't want to send it back and get something different, full of server hate spit. I realized it had been more than 2 weeks since my last RNA, and it would be easy to wait another 2 weeks after this, so I ate food that was okay but not too decadent, and used up an RNA. This is the restaurant that featured chocolate-covered peanut brittle as a post-dessert dessert. What have we become? So I had handfuls of that on the way out and called it an RNA meal. Penn and Teller on Broadway for 6 weeks, and did very well, thank you very much. Check out the New York Times write-ups. Being in New York, I needed a couple of days to eat food that was dictated not by Cray Ray, but by Original Ray. The first RNA in NYC was going to be at Katz's Deli. I would have gone to Carnegie Deli in Midtown, but they were closed, so I was going to Katz's. Our whole family went downtown. We went up to One World Trade Center and looked at the beautiful view of the city and out of the Statue of Liberty from high up in the new building. I tried to explain to my children why this new building made Daddy a little sad. After that, it was time for a cupcake. I had a nice, gooey, frosted, fancy-ass chocolate cupcake in the food area of the World Trade Center as my appetizer. And then we were off to Katz's. I had a lot of pickles, an egg cream, and 4 cans of Sel-Ray soda to start. I love Sel-Ray. The idea of a sugary soft drink that tastes like celery kills me. It seems like a joke, like blue cheese gum, but it's great. The fact that it tastes like celery doesn't mean it has anything to do with celery. It's just carbonated sugar water. 4 cans is enough for the meal, the day, the week, the month, the year, and maybe the rest of my life, but I loved it. Then I had matzo ball soup, and I ate some of Easy's bagel with lox and cream cheese. I had thick, greasy French fries, another thing I've been living for, a nice corned beef and pastrami on rye with mustard. Just perfect. I wanted to enjoy my NYC deli meal, and I played it up big for my family and friends, how much I was eating and how much I was loving it. But it was kind of bullshit. The cravings were gone. Cray Ray really had ruined me. I ate the whole sandwich with mustard, but not with relish. That joke is just for my wife. She loves that kind of cheesy wordplay shit. Just ignore it. The truth is, it seemed like crankcase oil on a salt lick. It was a little disgusting. This is nothing against Katz. They put out a great product, and you have to try it. They haven't changed. I have. The cheesecake was the same. Delicious, but not for me. Went to see a shitty musical, and after that, I had some soft-serve ice cream from a street vendor. I didn't really love any of it, and I felt like shit. Not explosive, embarrassing shit, but I didn't feel good. Just too full, sluggish, and oversalted. The next day, my weight was down 3 pounds. Normal fluctuation, and my BP was really good. One New York deli, even a great one, couldn't fuck me up. I know a lot about Broadway and NYC, so let's get into areas where I'm really talking out of my ass. That's where I'm at my best. Let me write a little bit about the microbiome. That's close to my ass. Cray Ray sent me a study that said some of the cooties that fuck up your heart and circulatory system are not cooties that are directly in the food. It's not like you eat this fucking crankcase oil and that goes into your heart and clogs it up. The way I understand it, which means wrong, is that the animal fat eating cooties in your microbiome eat the animal fat and then shit, do bacteria shit, out waste. And it's the bacteria shit cooties that fuck up your heart. That's how I understand it. So there's this study that Cray Ray sent me that I skimmed and didn't understand, which I'm not referencing as I write this, that I think showed if they took someone who eats a SAD and give him a hunk of prime rib and then checked his blood, it was filled with bad cooties. But if they took that same prime rib, well, not the same one, that's really disgusting, and fed it to a person who had been a vegan for a long while, there are many fewer, or maybe none, I don't remember, cooties in the hippie's blood. That's nuts. I didn't make this up. I just misunderstood it and misremembered it. The way I understand this, which is not at all, is that if you don't eat meat, you can eat all the meat you want without it hurting you. It's not the meat itself that fucks you. It's the cooties in your guts that eat the meat and shit out heart cooties that do. After a few months, I changed my microbiome so that when I did my RNA, there weren't too many meat cooties to feast in my guts and fuck me up. I could so easily be the science writer for the New York Times. My wife and I love to split a toasted, buttered corn muffin together when we're in NYC. This trip would not have been complete without one of those. Now, toasted, buttered corn muffin is yet another phrase for cake. So this would have been an R&A. A buttered corn muffin is romantic to us because when we were first married, I took Easy to see the greatest live band in the world, NRBQ, when they played near my hometown. And they have a song with the lyric, "Terry got a muffin and he buttered it down." Yep. We would have a corn muffin and butter it down. I put aside a day for that a couple of weeks after going to Katz's. It was the first day I'd done R&A on the same day that I had a P&T show in the evening. I really didn't want to feel sluggish during the show, but I also didn't want to miss a New York City eating day, and I had no more NYC eating days without a show in the evening. That morning, I was shooting some web ads for Withings Scales, and after talking about how healthy my diet was, I left the studio in Brooklyn, headed to Manhattan, to eat like a pig. This was going to be my street food day. Not gourmet, not expensive, just whatever I would love to eat while walking around Manhattan. Teller and Jonesy, our piano player, raved about this fancy hot chocolate at Rockefeller Center. I had that. It was fine. Not worth raving about. I went to Famous Ray's and a street slice of pizza. I shook some garlic salt onto it, folded it just right, and ate it. I didn't eat it all. I got sick of it. I let myself have a Sierra Mist lemon-lime soda with it. I had two sips. It was just too fucking sweet. I threw out half the pizza and most of the drink. I walked uptown to pick a bagel and had an everything bagel with lots of cream cheese. I also had a decaffeinated coffee, but I put a lot of cream and sugar in, the way I used to drink it when I was a child. The bagel didn't swing just right, so I tried another one, this time without the cream cheese, but with a lot of butter. Nope. I did a Broadway show that night, and it was okay. I might have been a little sluggish, but it was no disaster. After the show, Easy and I went out with Jonesy, the long-suffering Glenn, and some friend of his from high school who couldn't tell a joke to save his fucking life, but didn't know that, so kept telling them. We tried to hip him to his inadequacies, but he wouldn't take the hint. He wouldn't even take, "Hey, you can't tell a fucking joke to save your life!" Easy and I were going to have our toasted corn muffin, but I was already in my R&A window, so I had a lot of diner food that I loved. I had a grilled cheese with bacon, a chocolate milkshake, and a big order of fries, and we each had a corn muffin, and we buttered it down. The corn muffin was so big and so sweet and so salty that it was stupid. The next day, I went back to Furburger with a smile. Well, that's not true. It didn't feel like going back. It didn't feel like it needed a smile. It was just the way things are. There are no tricks. My dear daughter, Mox, asked me to be her Valentine and wanted me to please come off your diet and eat candy with me. So holidays are outside the day-to-day diet and not part of the two-week rule, which is falling away. On Valentine's Day and Halloween, I will have candy. On the 4th of July, I'll have hamburgers and chips. On Thanksgiving, I'll have pizza. And on both my children's birthdays, I'll have cake. And so should you. Dr. Furman and Dr. Michael Clapper are big honchos in this eating better thing. I've met them both. They're really wonderful men. They know food and health and spend a lot of time talking to people about cheat days and going on and off good food. That's a big part of their lives. I asked Dr. Clapper how often he runs out and has a donut or a burger. Never. I never even think about it. He's been eating well for his whole life. He's wicked healthy and happy. I asked Dr. Furman if he'd ever been to McDonald's in his life. He said, never, and then thought for a moment and said, "I did go once. I wanted a drink of water, and it was the only place around, so I went in and bought a bottle of water." He paused and then smiled and said, "But I didn't feel good about it." I'm getting there.